This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and this is Night School, the show that explores ideas and themes in the social sciences and the humanities. In this episode, we're going to be looking at gamelan, the traditional musical ensemble that has roots in the Nusantara. Joining me via Zoom to explore this are my co-hosts Simon Soon and Adam Farhan, anthropology major and gamelan ensemble director from Queen's University, Belfast. Check out our conversation.
So, hi, I'm Adam Farhan. I am a second-year anthropology with politics student at Queen's University, Belfast. And amongst other things, you know, I take up some student leadership positions and activism activities, but primarily I am the university's gamelan director.
So how did you come to the gamelan? Is this something that you're sort of like studying in your degree or is it extracurricular activity?
Well, it's more of an extracurricular activity. So I discovered gamelan, you know, a long time ago when I was a child visiting Museum Negara. And there's that hall of Malay culture, and in that hall, you can, you know, they play gamelan on a loop. And when I went to the US to study, the university next door to the university I was going to offered gamelan classes. And like, I thought, you know, if I'm overseas, I might as well just try to participate in my own culture since I'm, you know, so disembodied from my own culture. And so I started joining gamelan classes there. It was Javanese gamelan. And my passion for gamelan just like boomed from that start.
Are you Japanese yourself?
Oh, no, I'm actually half Indian, half Chinese.
Oh, okay, all
yeah.
right.
But I see this more as a greater...
Yeah, it's very interesting that you have, in some ways, claimed cultural ownership over this gamelan.
Well, it's you know, even though I'm half Chinese, half Indian, I'm very Malaysian in my identity. And like, I see this more as a greater Nusantara culture, rather than simply saying, okay, this is Malay gamelan, Javanese gamelan, Balinese gamelan. Because even in Javanese gamelan, you know, you have Sundanese and everything. You know, it's part of our regional culture. You know, we're all brothers and sisters.
Yeah. So how does your, maybe your study in anthropology actually help you inform or enrich your understanding of the gamelan? I see both of them in some ways going hand to hand, right?
Yeah. So, you know, there's ethnomusicology, which is a subset of anthropology where you study, you know, sort of the social organizations and social systems and cultural systems behind music. And so in America, I studied one ethnomusicology class on gamelan. And currently at the university, I'm still studying ethnomusicology through some courses on Greece. And we cover issues such as, you know, what is tradition within the arts context? And, you know, that's directly applicable to gamelan, as in, you know, in Balinese gamelan, is it traditional, so to speak? Because the Balinese gamelan that we're playing now is called Gong Ke Biao. And that actually only started in the early 20th century. And it's popularized through stuff like, you know, tourism activities. So is that traditional gamelan or is that just a modern, you know, creation? So, you know, we go over this narrative and this discourse a lot through my anthropological studies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Adam, for those of us who are not so familiar with the instrument gamelan, can you help perhaps describe to our listeners what gamelan is?
So gamelan is actually an ensemble of instruments, mostly metallophonic instruments, sort of like xylophones. And a gamelan is actually an orchestra. So just like an orchestra, you know, a Western orchestra has, you know, violins and a bass and drums and everything. A gamelan, it has all these different instruments to form one cohesive melody, one cohesive piece.
So you can't really play the gamelan on your own. You're kind of one man gamelan band, so to speak.
Exactly. So gamelan actually means to strike, as in when the mallet strikes the metallophonic instrument. But you can, when you play gamelan solo, you're actually just playing the particular gamelan instrument that you're playing yourself, which can be like a kantilan or a gangsa.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah. So what are the instruments in a gamelan ensemble?
So in gamelan music theory, there's actually three categories of musical instruments. So you have the balungan, which provides the basic melody through the metallophonic instruments like the gangsa. And then you have the panerusan, which elaborates on the basic melody, such as the trompong. And then finally, you have the kolotomic instruments, which set the tempo. So you have the gongs. And particularly, you have the gendang, which sort of acts as the director of the ensemble.
It almost seems as if you mentioned that there is also this idea of a gamelan theory.
Yeah.
What are some of the discussions around, you know, the theoretical framework that are used to discuss about the gamelan in this instance? Does it say something larger about the social sort of like ideas of the social within Southeast Asia?
Well, in gamelan, actually, because gamelan is very connected to both animist, Hindu, and Buddhist beliefs, and actually this trilogy in gamelan is like in Balinese gamelan is called the Triloka. And it's sort of based on Balinese cosmology about, I think, beneath the land, the earth, and then the sky. So everything's connected to spirituality. And that's why even in a gamelan composition, you have three parts, pengawit, pengawak, and pengecit, which is the beginning, the intro of the song, the main melody, and then the closing part. So everything's connected to this number of three. Even in the gamelan instrument construction, there's sort of three parts. That's the head, the body, and then the foot.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as I understand it, there is also such a thing as a Malay gamelan, right?
Yes.
It was probably introduced into the Malay ethnic sort of like world, probably sometime in the early 19th century.
Yes.
And how did that then sort of like, how was that then adapted to suit the Malay sort of cultural world?
So Malay gamelan was brought to Pahang originally by the Riau Sultanate, which is, south of Singapore. Mm-hmm. And I think what they did there was they sort of removed this animist aspect from the gamelan, where, in Javanese and Balinese gamelan, the gamelan itself is seen as sort of like a spiritual actor, which has a connection to the gods above, which is why you can't step over the gamelan instruments, for example. I think in Malay gamelan, what they did was secularize it, to suit, the Malay religion, because that goes into sort of being Shirik, Benda Shirik.
So is this performed in Malay villages or is this primarily a court culture?
It's a court culture.
It's a culture, then is it an aristocratic culture or is... I don't imagine a gamelan is used in a pertabalan, right? For example, which is the reserve of the nobat, which takes on a much more spiritual kind of... It has a more sort of like spiritual sort of like use, which the king is drumming to sort of like, into power.
Yeah.
I imagine the gamelan plays a different role. Is it primarily for entertainment or what other sort of like function or purpose does it serve within, say, Malay gamelan?
Well, from what I've heard, the Malay gamelan was first brought to be performed at the wedding ceremony for the Sultan of Pahang's daughter. So I guess gamelan in this sense, it provides, pleasure, performance through pleasure, but within the royal setting. Traditionally,
Do they share the same repertory then?
No.
Okay.
So Malay gamelan differs a lot from Javanese and Balinese gamelan in the sense that Malay gamelan is very simplified. So Malay gamelan has, on average, lesser instruments than a Javanese gamelan or Balinese gamelan. And even the songs, they have simpler melodies. They're more, how to say, halos.
Okay.
They're simpler, they're more calm.
Oh, really?
Whereas, like, Balinese gamelan is very rough, it's very animated. Right. Yeah.
How does it compare then to Javanese gamelan? Because when you talk about, Javanese culture, it's always seen as the paragon of kehalusan in the Nusantara world, right? On the degree of sort of like halos, where does it sort of, how do they compare to each other?
Javanese gamelan has many.
How do we understand this idea of the halos?
So in Javanese and Balinese culture, there's halos and kasa dichotomy, where kasa, so this is actually based on the Hindu Ramayana and Mahabharata story, where I think it's Arjuna that's halos and, no, Rama is halos and then Arjuna is kasa, I think. But basically what I was trying to teach you is that you can have a very calm and very composed character on one end, and then a very rough and sort of more angry character on the other end. So in that sense, gamelan also takes after that, where you have pieces which are halos and pieces which are kasa. That's why in a Javanese gamelan, when you have a certain character, for example, when it's being played within the context of a Wayang Kulit performance, when you have a character that's more halos, the gamelan will be played more softly and more calmly. Then when you have a character that's kasa, they'll play a particularly kasa, composition.
That means, I imagine it would be a lot more upbeat, the tempo is faster, and it's meant to sort of like evoke a sense of passion, arouse passion, and quickens your blood and stuff yes. like that.
Yes, it's meant to kind of shock you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a piece particularly called Sampak, which is, you know, very animated, and they play it many times throughout a Wine Coolit performance. But that, for example, is very kasa.
Okay.
Does the gamelan accompany any performances, or is it like a performance that can stand on its own?
Well, within the, you mean in the Malay context or the Javanese or?
In all of the contexts.
Yeah. All of the contexts. So gamelan is, it depends, but gamelan can be played, you know, just by itself. You know, like Malay gamelan is usually played either by itself or just to accompany some dancing. In Java, the gamelan is played also to accompany dancing or to accompany wine coolit performance, but also it's played by itself as a part of like religious ceremonies in the kraton, in the palaces of Yogyakarta and Surakarta. And in Bali, it's commonly played for temple ceremonies.
Right. I mean, based on your description, it almost as if like gamelan is the sort of like, it's part of this larger kind of like, what the Germans would call a Gesamtkunstwerk, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of a theatrical sort of like performance where sort of elements including performances, including visual sort of like as dimensions of the performance then get sort of like incorporated into creating this whole and complete kind of like work. And this idea of like wholeness and this idea of sort of like completeness, does that... Is that a metaphor for something? I cannot help but think even the idea of the orchestra itself just being part of a whole does seem to sort of like suggest some kind of interconnection between elements.
Well, gamelan in itself, it sort of perpetuates a social structure that is egalitarian. Mm-hmm. So gamelan, for example, so there's something called a pokok, and the pokok is the main melody. So in Bali, they believe the pokok is created by an ensemble of different individual actors, but to create one holistic, you know, composition. So in gamelan, there's no sort of taking it for yourself. You don't have any solos, like guitar solos. Everyone's being played on an equal level, and everyone's position and everyone's contribution is regarded as equal. And in gamelan, in Balinese gamelan particularly, you also have the lanang and wadon dichotomy. But in this case, lanang and wadon, they're regarded as male and female instruments. So there has to be a balance between male and female. And the wadon instrument is actually pitched slightly lower than the lanang. And that creates sort of, how I say, a shimmering sound.
Oh, okay.
And so that sound is what completes the gamelan.
Right.
And that balance is what completes the gamelan.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. I see.
So gamelan is very, you know, it's an equal, egalitarian, and very balanced. It can be a metaphor for society as well, that you have to have balance, you have to have equality, democracy, you know.
Given it suggests so much sort of like social participation, what do you think the gamelan has to sort of like teach us about in our sort of current situation where, you know, social distancing is something that is, you know, not just expected, but encouraged?
Yeah. Well,
we're expected to sort of like keep, you know, a bit of a distance.
So if we can regard saving ourselves from COVID-19 as the pokok, as the main melody of our lives right now, we all have to take our own separate but egalitarian parts in this narrative, in us staying at home, in order to create the main cohesive melody, which is that we will eventually go towards having zero cases and come out of this pandemic.
Is that something that you sort of like share with other people? What do your friends sort of like think about that idea?
Well, I haven't really discussed it with my friends. You know, gamelan's it's a very niche subject, so it tends not to come to my discussions. But I think we all kind of, you know, we all have our own part to play here, just as a gamelan player has their own part to play. And, you know, we just have to follow it and we have to respect it. Just like in gamelan where you can't step over, you know, there's certain taboos. You can't step over an instrument. Mm-hmm. So here the taboo is not to go outside, and it's just to be, you know, duduk di rumah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I imagine it's also encouraging us to sort of think about adat differently, right? Is there a new adat that's emerging from our current situation?
Yeah.
Can we create a gamelan ensemble using, for example, Zoom?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Absolutely.
Have you played around with this? Are you exploring, you know, some of these new interfaces that allows still at least communicate with each other.
Yeah. Well, the only problem with using Zoom for gamelan is that each person has to possess, you know, each gamelan instrument, which is going to be very costly, of course. But
right, yeah.
You know, with with the infrastructure, you know, absolutely, a gamelan can be virtual. A gamelan can be played with, you know, players from, you know, one player's in Bali, one player's in Jakarta, one player's in Kuala Lumpur, one's in Tokyo, one's in Chicago. And in fact, now we're having, I've seen examples of sape performances from Borneo being played, you know, across Southeast Asia by people using Zoom, so.
That was Adam Farhan, anthropology major and gamelan ensemble director from Queen's University, Belfast. And together with Simon Soon, we've been talking about gamelan and its many nuances. You've been listening to Night School with me, Hanif Baharudin. We're going for a short break. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're tuned in to Night School with me, Hanif Baharudin. I'm joined by Simon Soon and our guest of the week, Adam Farhan. He's an anthropology major and gamelan ensemble director from Queen's University, Belfast. And we're currently exploring that traditional musical ensemble. Here's the second part of the conversation.
Would you have any, you know, interesting sort of music within the gamelan repertoire to sort of share with us? Because yeah. I remember being once a gamelan student, a Japanese gamelan. There was a song that I really like to play. It was called Kabogiro.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think it's like the most basic sort of like melody, right?
It's quite basic, yeah.
It's very, really, really sort of like basic. And we sort of like, I think the instructor used to sort of like get us to imagine this sort of like crazy kerbau.
Yeah.
That's going on a sort of like rampage around town.
Okay.
And, you know, going a bit nutty.
Yeah.
And that sort of like stuck to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of, I guess, people who are used to say the idea of the melody in classical music, I think gamelan sort of like the repetition that you find within gamelan is sometimes very challenging.
Yeah.
Right?
True.
But nevertheless, I think it's with this sort of like imagery that it's sort of like evoked through the titles of the song.
Yeah.
And it actually sort of like, helps me a lot in actually remembering how the melody sort of like sound. I wonder if that's the experience that you have as well, and what
you
have to get your students to even remember those sort of like scores.
Yeah. So that cycle you're talking about is called the gongan. And the gongan can have, 4 to 8 to 16 to 32 notes in each gongan, which means you have to remember all those notes and then repeat it. So, of course, for the repertoire that I have in Belfast, it's quite simple. I just have eight notes. And one thing I do is I don't use notation.
Okay.
So, yeah, because when you're looking at, you know, it's like taking an exam, you know, you're looking at a piece of paper, 6213265166.
So you don't even write it down like
the
way normally sort of like teach you how to read.
Yeah, no.
Notation, okay.
I don't do that. Because after all, your focus is on the paper and not the music. So what I want to do what I do in Belfast is I play the melody for them and then I show them where the notes are on their own instruments. And then I just have them repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. And over time, the focus, you know, it becomes muscle memory, the song.
Mm.
And it's called Wirasa in Balinese. It's sort of like you have the feeling, you know, you have the muscle memory. And you don't have to look at the notes anymore. And what that allows in Balinese gamelan is that, you see, a lot of things in Balinese gamelan are not written down. And the song is it's free-flowing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's certain drum patterns. When I do a drum pattern, they have to change the melody immediately. And I decide when to change that drum pattern. And that's not something that you can write down because, you know, you can't write down. So you play gongan 5 times, then I do drum melody, and then you play a different melody 3 times, and then drum. By taking the emphasis away from the paper and moving it to your ears, it helps to allow this transition to be easier, where they know what to look out for in terms of sound to dictate what they're playing.
I wonder if the idea of what did you just mentioned the word mirasa, is it?
Yeah, mirasa.
Mirasa, is that translatable to a kind of angin? In say, text, or does it sort of like carry a more Sanskritic sort of like?
I think it's more Sanskritic. Angin is very, how to explain? Okay, angin is more inside you, I guess. Whereas with Wirasa, it's more being in tune with everyone else who's playing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So if Angin is individual, Virasa is communal.
Right. How do you feel about them not being able to sort of like actualize this very communal activity, given that, you know, it's impossible? I don't think I know anyone who actually owns the entire sort of gamelan set.
Yeah.
Like, normally you would either store it at a university, or historically, of course, it's in a temple compound, or and then everyone sort of like comes to the instrument and brings it to life, so to speak.
So that's the thing about gamelan. It's not an accessible instrument.
Okay.
And like even at home, I don't own any gamelan instruments. All I have is some gendang with me, but I think that's the beauty of having these institutions overseas, because they bring Southeast Asian culture and they make it accessible to, you know, to the citizens in the West. And that's something that I find difficult in Malaysia, because I find it odd that in Malaysia, I don't have access to a gamelan set, but over in Northern Ireland, in Belfast, I do.
Right.
And so if they can ease access to gamelan like that, because there's actually two gamelan sets in Belfast. One is the one belonging to the university. It's my gamelan, it's called Widya Santi. And then there's another gamelan, a Javanese gamelan, at a nearby community center. And that's open to all members of the public, but particularly for people who are disabled, and sort of gives them a voice and gives them an outlet. But what it is that it makes gamelan very accessible to the public. Anyone can join. Like even for my gamelan, I have members of the public joining because it's open to everyone. Whereas in Malaysia, I find like I don't know where to go when I want to play a gamelan. And even if, you know, there's classes at KL Pack every Saturday, and I still have to pay for that, which is understandable, but that's a barrier.
Right. And you don't pay for these classes that you teach at to communities in Ireland, in Northern Ireland?
No. I mean, I'm employed by the university to teach it, but participation is free for everyone. Yeah. I think it's kind of odd that gamelan culture can thrive overseas, and here I'm seeing sort of a steady decline, perhaps.
Mm. Was it ever big?
In Malaysia?
Yeah, in the first place. Because I never imagined that it's such a... it's not like, say, for example, Wayang Siam.
Yeah.
You have, you know, it's really part of a very lively peasant
sort
of culture, and it's kind of a harvest festival.
Yeah.
And it's really part of the life world of the local rakyat, whereas gamelan the transmission seemed to be very sort of like contained within a social bubble.
Gamelan in Malaysia is very institutionalized. So what you have is you have Malay gamelans being taught either in schools, like in the current context, either in, you know, primary or secondary schools, or in institutions, universities. So to say that it was ever popular is maybe not right. Maybe it wasn't popular as a, you know, as entertainment, but it was always in people's minds, at least.
Mm.
And now when I talk to a lot of Malaysians about gamelan, they don't know what it is. And I think a part of that problem is that it's gamelan so institutionalized. You know, you don't hear it played on the radio.
Right.
And people have very few opportunities to experience it.
Mm. Is it also down to the fact that because it's also kind of aristocratic in that sense? Unlike kompang, which is a bit more accessible for the grassroots, right? Is it because of that as well?
Yeah, I think it could be because of that. You know, people feel that gamelan is sometimes not appropriate in certain contexts, which is why, you know, you only hear it in weddings nowadays. Yeah, it could be.
Right. You know,
yeah.
So how do you think the gamelan is actually enriching your study of anthropology?
Yes.
Let's sort of like telescope outwards and think more broadly about your field of study, because I feel like there is a sort of like correlation between these two.
Well, okay, so in anthropology, what I find is we're not studying the differences between humans. We are studying the similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do in gamelan is I don't treat it as an intellectual.
On what basis are you making the claim? Do you mind elaborating a bit?
The similarities and differences?
Yeah, the similarity. Where is the sort of like idea coming from, and how do you sort of that idea?
Well, in anthropology, we tend to boil down certain cultural practices into categories, you know. So, yeah, I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is that everyone does things differently, but in the end, it has the same function, kind of. And, like, humans aren't... These cultural differences shouldn't be barriers between people. You know, they're just, they're unifiers.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I think it reminded me of what my supervisor sort of like used to tell me. We've got one nose, we've got two eyes, we've got two hands, we've got two feet. A pair of feet. So how different can we really be at the end of the day?
Exactly.
And you were saying, can you elaborate a bit more about how the relationship, how's your sort of like study going?
Yeah.
Is it sort of like pushing you to consider certain topics in anthropology and, you know, training your attention at certain sort of like issues that anthropologists find it relevant and urgent to discuss at this point in time?
Okay, so now we're talking about gamelan and anthropology or COVID and anthropology?
How gamelan then connects to maybe some of the burning issues that are being sort of like discussed in anthropology at the moment.
Right. So, like I said before, gamelan is, I don't treat it as an intellectual exercise, so to speak. Gamelan is more of a practical exercise. So when you enter the gamelan room, I'm trying to replicate participant observation fieldwork, but in Belfast, which is why, for example, when you enter the gamelan room, you take off your shoes and you sort of conform to the various traditions, various adat surrounding gamelan, like not stepping over the instruments, you treat everything with respect. But also what I do with gamelan is building into that, building on similarities rather than differences. I try to apply gamelan to people's interests. And I tell them, like, I try to give them a link to gamelan because gamelan seems like something that's really foreign, you know, from Belfast. So for example, there's a student in my class who's currently studying experimental music, music concrete. And what I told him was that composers such as Steve Reich actually built on gamelan as their inspiration in terms of the interlocking melodies. So I try to find a link between what they're doing and what gamelan is. You know, it's sort of like negotiating cultural barriers.
Right. And how are they receiving it then, given that you have provided points of connection? Are the links then sort of like immediately established, or do you find that there are more work that you sort of like, you know, it's a sort of like ongoing negotiation and conversation?
Yeah. Well, it's sometimes difficult to sort of explain certain rules. Like, for example, the thing I keep going back to is the not stepping over the instruments thing. I find that some of my students don't, at the beginning, they don't really respect it because they think it's just, you know, it's just like this foreign taboo that I'm talking, that I tell them about. But actually,
it's step over an instrument, like you sort of like straddle over a bonham.
Yeah, kind of. Because sometimes, you know, the way the gamelan instruments are placed, sometimes you have to go past the instrument to get to your instrument. And what you're actually supposed to do is move it slightly and then walk past it instead of walking over it. And people think it's just a taboo, but actually it serves a purpose that's not spiritual. It's, you know, to prevent the risk of damaging instruments. So again, I have to explain that, you know, it's not specifically spiritual. It serves a practical purpose as well.
How do they then see you as a teacher then? especially when it comes to maybe students with an interest in non-Western sort of like forms of cultural practice, does that then sort of like color their view or understanding of you as a teacher? Do they sort of see you as a guru? Do they sort of like project certain sort of like exotic, do they sort of like, you know, filter you through an exotic lens, or how do you then sort of like, you know, in anthropology then try to mediate some of these cultural tensions, I imagine, continue to sort of like exist, in moments of intercultural exchange.
Yeah. So what I do in gamelan is, okay, when you're learning gamelan in like a Javanese or Balinese ensemble, generally the dalang, you know, the director, he's a very enigmatic figure. You know, he studied gamelan for, you know, ever since he was a child, and he knows everything about gamelan, and he's just this like spiritual being that you're scared of. But in the context of my ensemble, I'm a student just like anyone else. Now, I'm second year, they may be first year, some of them may be third year, some of them are master's students. So I've broken down that barrier in the sense that I'm just on an equal playing field as all of them. And what I do is I try to learn from them as well, rather than always teaching them. So like, I welcome their suggestions and sort of their contributions to gamelan. Like sometimes, a lot of the time when they come to the class and, you know, we're just setting up, they like to try to find Western melodies on the gamelan, like Mary Had a Little Lamb. it actually, it can't be done.
Why the popularity of Mary Had a Little Lamb? Is it because it's like a, you know, a classic piano?
I think it's just simple.
Okay.
But what I have to show them is that, you know, gamelan is, it's a different scale from Western music, which is why you can't often find Western melodies in there. But then they find like a different melody that sounds Western, but sounds, you know, it just sounds catchy. And then sometimes we play with it for a while. You know, we just jam, we have some gamelan fusion going on. We even have a piano in the corner. And sometimes I'll have someone play the gamelan melody on that piano. And then we have the rest of the ensemble come in. And, you know, we do a bit of experimentation. So it's like it's a give and take, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Can you play gamelan in an improv way, a la like a jazz improv? Or do you have to always follow the structure of gamelan ensemble, a la like an orchestra?
I mean, can la. You can do anything you want with gamelan. It's a very, you know, it's applicable to anything, which is why if you see, you know, they've been doing sort of gamelan jam outs with a bass, with Western, you know, Western drum kit. Even in Java, they've started to introduce like cymbals, like Western drum cymbals into gamelan. And what you're seeing there is a change in tradition.
Yeah. So when you say there's a change in tradition, what do you mean? Is it colored through the lens of a different way of reading music or a different way of understanding music?
It's a different way of interpreting what gamelan can be.
Right. So when you have drum cymbals, for example, what changes as a result of that?
Well, we don't have, like in Javanese gamelan, that isn't an instrument equivalent to the cymbal.
Okay.
But in Wayang Kulit shows, they use it because it provides a really funny sound effect.
Like movie or something like that. Yeah.
But what they do is they use that in the gamelan composition, sort of periodically, as a colotomic instrument.
Okay. Right.
Do you keep in touch or do you communicate with the traditional practitioners of gamelan, and what are their thoughts on a more, I guess, modern take on or modern approach on gamelan?
Well, because my gamelan teachers, well, I did study in Bali for a short while, and the person who taught me gamelan, particularly the gendang, the drum, he actually had a side job as a DJ in a nightclub.
Oh, wow.
So even from the beginning.
Is he from a younger man?
Yeah. He's one of the younger ones. But like, even from the beginning, you know, he used to show me, he does gamelan samples in some of the stuff that he DJs. And he plays around and he experiments. So he uses gamelan samples and like electronic dance music. So even from the beginning, I don't see gamelan as something that is disembodied from the wider cultural context. Gamelan can be anything you want.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, as a director, do you then compose your own music and...
Well,
and it's something that you're exploring yourself together with the cohort that you're teaching and learning from in Belfast.
Well, building on that participant observation sort of method that I'm trying to implement, what I do, I try to keep the repertoire as traditional as possible just to give my students a sort of somewhat authentic Balinese experience as best as I can give them. But what I do is I take bits of different traditional songs and I make them into one composition. So they have a taste of different types of gamelan compositions.
Okay. I mean, something like this then requires to sort of like do quite a bit of improvisation and innovate and introduce a bit of innovation to a composition, right?
Yeah.
I imagine.
Yes.
I mean, in order to sort of like achieve that, I imagine that you would at least have a good understanding of every single sort of like musical instrument within the gamelan orchestra.
Yeah.
How long does it take for you to achieve that skill?
Yeah. So
and who do you have to go to? Do you have to go to different teachers to learn different instruments, for example, or and what's the process in which someone's able to acquire that knowledge?
So the way, if you're in a gamelan ensemble long term, I think your first year or two, you tend to switch between different instruments, because the teacher will try to give you as much exposure as possible. So in my first year of gamelan in America, what I did was every week I switched between instruments.
Okay.
And then after that, I started focusing on one instrument the one of the harder ones to sort of build my expertise in that. So I went from, you know, the Sauron to the gongs to the Kempo. And then I focus on the Bonang Panerusan, sort of the interlocking Bonang. Yeah, as I was saying, in America, you know, I just switched between a lot of different instruments when I was first learning gamelan. And over a year, I gained proficiency in a lot of Javanese instruments. And Javanese and Balinese instruments aren't too dissimilar in their form, but it's just different in the way they're played.
Right.
So when I first arrived in Belfast and I saw this Balinese gamelan, I just used to spend hours just playing it, like watching YouTube videos of people playing Balinese gamelan and then playing it myself in Belfast.
So you could do that. I mean, for me, Balinese gamelan seemed like, you know, they're Javanese gamelan but on speed, right?
Yeah, that's so exactly.
The tempo is like, you know, three times as fast as how you would sort of like, you know, hit your note on a Javanese sort of like xylophone.
Yeah.
A Javanese sort of like instrument.
Yeah.
How long does it take for you to sort of like get to the level where you're comfortable, you know, going at that speed?
Yeah. I think it took a few months of practice in Belfast before I could play Balinese gamelan at the speed it's required. Even now, you know, if you listen to the recordings of my ensemble playing, we play much slower than we're actually supposed to, just because I can't make all the students play at such a fast speed. But that's the thing about gamelan as well. It's like you can just adapt it to whatever context, and you can adapt it to the students' needs and students' requirements. Mm.
You spoke a lot about adaptivity of the gamelan, and it's sort of like flexibility, right? It doesn't sound like it's so much an instrument that is rooted in our normal understanding of sort of tradition. Do you care to sort of maybe tell us more about that? And does that then change our way of understanding what tradition is?
Mm-hmm. Well, gamelan,
you know, think of tradition as a very fixed body of, you know, set of practice.
Yeah.
That's what you're suggesting is something much more versatile, much more and amenable to change.
Yeah. Well, even on the subject of tradition, like what I've studied in anthropology and what I've actually observed is that tradition is not a rigid set of rules to conform to. Tradition is just a bank of knowledge of which new knowledge is constantly being added to. So tradition can change over time, such as, you know, gamelan. Gamelan has changed from being a tradition of like Ginde Wayang and Sema Pagulingan to gamelan Gong Kebia, which is the animated form of Balinese gamelan that you now hear. And in the same sense, yeah, that's what gamelan can be. It's just a body of knowledge. So you have the instruments and you can adapt it and you can add new knowledge to it. You can add new instruments to it and you can adapt it to however you want it to be adapted to.
Well, given that we live in a time of huge change and huge rapid and significant sort of change, what do you think this body of knowledge, as a sort of like summary, maybe since we're running out of time, what do you think this body of knowledge can offer us?
I think it shows that, you know, we have the old normal, which was us going to Mamak every night, Lepak. At least for the time being, that old normal is gone. We have to embrace a new normal. But that doesn't mean that we're changing. You know, that doesn't exactly mean negative change. We're just adding to this body of knowledge. And, you know, we might go back to the old normal eventually, but we have to adapt as the world changes.
That was Adam Farhan, an anthropology major and gamelan ensemble director from Queen's University, Belfast. And we've been exploring gamelan and its many different facets. Share your thoughts with us by tweeting us at BFM Radio, or you can send us an email to nightschool@bfm.my. Don't forget to also download the BFM app, which you can find on the Apple App Store and Google Play. Remember to stay at home if and when possible, practice physical distancing and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.